Hello, I'm Kenny Linden with Radio Free Palmer, and joining me in the studio today is Republican candidate for House District 11, Delana Johnson. Delana Johnson is the current mayor of Palmer. Welcome, and thank you for joining us today.
Thank you for having me. Good to be here.
Great. Our theme for our questions are, the theme is for all of our questions, the more things change, the faster they change. So we'll go ahead and dive right into our first question. Here in Alaska, some Native elders are saying our traditional knowledge is no longer reliable. Describe how you think this observation applies to politics in Alaska.
Well, I think traditionally in Alaska, things have been a little different. There's traditionally been lots of pots of money to go to, and that's just not the way that can be done anymore. So things have changed in the sense that when there was priorities that had to be made, there was maybe you didn't have to really make hard choices. You could just fund both or fund more than one. And now we're to this point when we're going to really have to make some tough policy decisions, and we don't have the pots of money to go to anymore. So traditionally, maybe we've gotten a little lazy on making those hard choices, and that's probably going to have to change.
Do you think that's a perspective that you could bring to the legislature? Is a place of being able to make tough choices? Is that part of your experience as being mayor? Or
yeah, I think that we have to balance our budget. We have to make priorities, and so it comes from having thoughtful discourse and discussion. But I'm not afraid to make a decision. That's just what you have to do. And it's not going to be easy. It's like something you have to exercise. And that's how, traditionally we haven't had to do that, but now we will. And how are people going to be communicated with? How are constituents going to react? That will probably be a lot different. And it's going to require a lot of discussion between people, or people are going to feel disenfranchised. They will be disappointed. Those are the things, the words you don't want to hear. And that's, that's what you're going to have to do as far as communicating with people.
Communicating. Yeah. Great. Our second question. In your life to date, how have you managed adapting to change?
Well, I grew up without running water and electricity, and now I have all the modern comforts of a modern conference. So, that's a change that was very easy to adapt to. But generally, I do think that when you have changing conditions, it's really about your base knowledge or your base skills and planning for other contingencies. So, you can't always predict what's ahead of you. It's just you just have to be prepared. And so I think that's the goal. And I think I've done well in the changes I've had to do just because I've prepared in general for things.
Can you speak to some of those changes in your political experience or your experience either as the mayor or in other roles that you've had in the past?
Well, I think one thing that is, anyone that has done a building project, when you have, even if you have all the money in the world and all the, everything laid out perfectly, which is not how I usually did my projects, but, and had everything planned to the nth degree, there is always unexpected things. I mean, you may encounter, supplies that come in late. You may have, a crew that, can't come in on a certain day. So you're always have to adapt to change during a building project. I mean, keep things on schedule, to keep things on budget. And I guarantee you, when you talk about remodeling an old building, you have no idea what you're going to encounter when you open up a wall or a foundation. And so in my professional experience and in the remodeling that I've done, and I've done numerous places, you just have to have a good understanding of what you might encounter and be prepared to deal with it. So it comes with just being able to think a little bit on the fly, but it's not about thinking right in that moment. It's like thinking through the contingencies of what might happen and be prepared for two or three things that might come up. So I think when you talk about adapting to change, some of it's being quick on your feet, but some of it's just solid, you know, just hard work and preparation for what you might get into and knowing some of the possibilities. And so you can, you know, it's kind of a base level of skill that you have to have in place.
How do you think that will translate to being in the legislature, that idea of preparedness or that adaptability?
Oh, I think there's changing. I think in a day-to-day kind of sense, I'm sure that things come up and there's, you know, unexpected pieces that you have to, you know, have to consider. You know, unexpectedly, there's this that happens and that's that happens. And so, you know, having a solid background and doing your research and just knowing where you're coming from, I think that's important. So you're not just thinking on the fly. But I think having a long-term understanding of Alaska and having a long-term sense of how do people survive here, whether it's and you know, a blue collar job, large projects, small projects, you know, your everyday work, professionals, and so on. Having a real knowledge of the people in the district will give me a good sense of if something comes my way, what do people that are supporting me or have voted for me, or just the people that didn't but they're still in the district, how am I going to represent people? That's going to come from having a broad spectrum of knowledge and understanding of what's happening here will help me make thoughtful decisions when I'm there.
Great, thank you. Moving on to our next question. If you consider yourself a conservative, describe the best qualities and achievements of liberals with whom you have worked or vice versa.
Well, so this was I don't know if it was a, I don't think it was the toughest question. It was probably the most interesting question. And I guess I consider myself a conservative. Other people consider me a conservative. I don't like to go around and, you know, say this person's a liberal and this and so on, because I don't really like the label piece of that. But so I will only talk about people that I know of as calling it, who are self-described liberals. And one thing I do appreciate is a sense, I think, of volunteerism. I think there's that people that will just do so much hard work for the community. And I don't know that it's exclusive to one, you know, train of thought or the other, but I do really know lots of people that I think have given a lot to the community that would be self-described liberals. And I appreciate, you know, I just really do appreciate that quality.
Is that coming out of your perspective of being at city council meetings every other Tuesday and being the mayor, or is that from a broader sense of volunteering within the community? How have you experienced that?
Well, you know, the beauty of local politics is it's nonpartisan. And so I always say, you know, a liberal or a conservative hits a pothole just the same and don't like it just as much. So, you know, you do have the chance, I think, being in local government to really work with lots of people without having those barriers thrown up of you're on this camp and you're in that camp. And so, like I said, I mean, I don't go around and go, gee, this person that's working on this project is a liberal and this is a conservative. And gee, I'm going to balance out which one's doing this or that. But so, you know, but I do really think that from being in the city and being it's not just being mayor, but really being involved for a long time, I really appreciate the heart and spirit of a lot of people. And you know, I do think that there's a lot of people I know that are self-described liberals that have given so much to our town and our community. And I appreciate that. And I recognize that no matter what perspective they, you know, no matter what, you know, what political perspective they come from. I think the broader piece of it is when you just step back and look at it all, we're just out here on this, you know, blue rock spinning around, and, you know, we're not all that much. We're all hopefully working for the best for all of us. And, you know, sometimes it seems like it's easy to split and start saying, oh, this person's here and this person's here and this perspective, this and that. But in the long run, you know, most people I know, no matter what their political perspective is, they're really trying to do the best for their for other people and for their community.
Great. Thank you. Moving on to our next question. As a candidate for the state legislature, do you believe that the way the people's business is conducted needs to change? And if so, describe a specific way that change can be achieved.
Well, I think we have a good system. I don't think that we're, you know, the system is broken. I think that right now we're in some difficulties. I think we've all, many, many people are frustrated and feeling a bit disappointed, maybe a little disenfranchised with how things have been going in Juneau. There's obviously a crisis of leadership. But the system itself is not broken as much as I believe the communication and probably communication within from constituents. There's also, again, we have a changing circumstance. I think a lot of people that are already in the legislature have had a hard time dealing with that because this is their breaking new ground for them, for themselves. So, but I think if you look back in history and you look at the years from Reagan and Tip O'Neill, they really didn't get along. They're both Republicans, but they didn't really see eye to eye. But the legislation that they did hammer out, most people would say while neither of them maybe got completely what they wanted, and maybe they didn't get lots of things passed, but what they did get passed was solid legislation. And I think that came from a true desire to want to have a workable solution. And so as far as the people's business, well, people, you know, in general, we need to be looking for that workable solution. No matter what camp you're in, whether it's the Senate, you know, in the House, whether it's the governor in the legislature, you know, whether it's, you know, the majority and the minority, I mean, there's going to have to be some kind of common vision and working together to come out with solid legislation to move Alaska forward. And it probably in that case, do I think things need to change? Well, yeah, I think we need to see something happen.
Do you think that your perspective as have you, or I guess I should ask first, have you been in the legislature before?
No.
Okay. So do you think your perspective as coming from outside is something that would be beneficial or in relationship to an incumbent that has had previous years experience in the legislature when it comes to what that common vision you talked about, how to come together and move forward with a common vision since we are looking at a pretty steep fiscal cliff coming up and looming?
No, I would say that it's easy to stand on the sidelines and say this is this and this is how, you know, this has given me some great advantage. In general, I would say the people outside of Juneau probably have an advantage this year, because I don't know if it's the isolation, I don't know exactly what it is, but it has been seems to be far removed from what's happening here or what people locally are feeling. So that really does, I do have some concerns about that, and I certainly recognize that. And I believe I probably do have a better perspective just because I've been up here talking to people. And I've been, as I go out and I talk to people at the door, I mean, the level of frustration has been very surprising to me. And I don't know that, I don't know if the people that are representing us in Juneau have really know the level of what that is. I've frankly been very surprised at how people have been feeling about this. And I mean, I didn't expect that when I started this, you know, when I started the campaign and really going out and talking to people.
Do you think part of that is you talked about communicating with constituents? Do you think that that's part of the disconnect between legislators in Juneau and what they're hearing from constituents or access to legislators? Is that possible? Why, you know, we're seeing that? Or and then if it is, how will you try to mitigate that if you become a legislator?
You know, I've thought about this, and I've tried to really figure out what it is that's causing this kind of I would say, and I don't think it's because it's a movement of some kind of media or so on. I mean, I think it's individuals are actually having these kinds of, you know, individually are having these kinds of same frustrations. They're common as you go from door to door. Best I configure, and I, after I've thought about this, is I believe the frustration stems from confusion. And I think that people are confused about what's happening in Juneau. And I, you know, I know a little bit about state government. I've been involved. I've lobbied for things as the Conference of Mayors president and as the mayor of Palmer. I mean, I've spent some time there. I've spent a lot of time researching it and so on. So I'm part of the system, and I'm still confused. I mean, is the budget really at $4.5 million? Is that really include the tax credit? So it's really at $5.5 billion? Are we talking about 2018 money? I mean, there's all this information that comes flooding back. What we do know is that there's a budget problem. We know that, you know, some legislatures are saying, are pointing fingers at the governor's office. The governor is vetoing, and there's hand wringing, and there's grandstanding, and I don't feel like we really know. We don't know what the vision of our legislators and our governor is getting to. Are we getting to a budget number? Are we prioritizing? Is the budget number a true budget number? And when I try to analyze it, I'm not entirely clear on what's going on. And I think, well, if I'm someone that has this much, you know, already interaction, someone that is, you know, somewhat interested, I mean, how can you sort this out? And so maybe it is a matter of educating the people and letting them know what's going on. But I think as much as anything, it's the idea that no one has expressed or communicated a common vision of where we're going. I mean, I'm not hearing that from anywhere. It's more like, well, we're trying to get to a budget number. Well, a budget number is pretty simple arithmetic, but it does have a complex moral solution. And no one's talking about, you know, what we're going to do to get that number. There seems to be this feeling there's smoke and mirrors and so on. And I think really a lot of times anger and frustration comes out of confusion. And that's where I think it's coming from.
Great. Thank you. Moving on to our next question. And this one is asking you to be a bit of a Oracle of Delphi at this point, but describe your prediction about the makeup of the next legislature. Explain your reasoning and the probability that you will be right.
Well, this is where I would be in Las Vegas. Yeah. I have no idea. I think there's a lot of good people running out there. I think I can work with any of them. I've been focused on my race. And my goal is to have the best representation for Palmer. I have no idea what the makeup of the legislature is going to look like. I mean, people are like I said, they cuss, they discuss, they go through all the details and make predictions. And I'm certainly not going to be one of those. And I'd probably be wrong. That would be my probability. Who knows? I have no idea.
Great. Thank you. Moving on to our next question. The discussion about the budget has taken up most of the current legislative session. If further cuts in expenditures are to be done, describe specifically what those cuts should be and also what impacts the cuts will have. If additional revenues are to be added, also specifically describe them and their impact.
Well, you know, then and people want to ask this question, and I'd like to give a good answer to it. But the answer is, I have no idea what the specifics lines should be. I, first of all, don't have access to all the information. Secondly, it's the governor's job to propose the budget. It's the legislator's job to appropriate the money to it. But I do think that we have departments. We probably have large departments with assets that can be consolidated. I think there can be some big savings there. I think that... We have some things looming out there that we're going to have to deal with as far as like our retirement funds and things like that. We can't just ignore them. So we are going to have to find some revenues. I mean, there's no question about it. And that is probably going to may call for some sales of state assets, more land sales, more resource sales, you know, all of those things that actually can be good for Alaska's economy and get people working and put money in the state coffers, all of those things. But So I can't speak exactly to the specifics, but there is, I mean, it's no secret. I mean, obviously, we're going to have to make changes. But I'd like to see, you know, potentially the departments are going to have to come back. They're going to have to come back with some specific cuts, and whether we're going to have audits to determine what that is, I'm not exactly sure. I would say one more thing, though. I will say the Health and Human Services budget, if we start from the largest budget and go down, that's where we're going to find the most savings at. Health and Human Services being the largest budget, you know, is probably where you begin to look at with the Medicaid expansion and how that really all ties together. That's probably where we can find the most savings at.
What do you mean by with Medicaid expansion and the Health and Human Services budget?
I'm sorry, Medicaid expansion and the administration of it, as well as how much federal funds come in to it and how much it costs to administrate all that. We have, I mean, to make sure that that's not costing us, you know, significant amounts, I think we have to be thoughtful in the way that how we're going to, what we put in place to administer and take care of the Medicaid expansion itself, how we're going to bill, how we're going to deal with the insurance pieces, all of those things we're putting something in place that could balloon out of control. And I think we have to be very careful that doesn't happen.
Going back to a comment you said towards the beginning of this question, you talked about that it's the government's or the governor's job to propose the budget and the legislature's job to appropriate the funds. What is your perspective? You also talked about not having all of the information as well, mm-hmm. as not being a current legislator. But could you talk to your perspective of the current relationship between the governor and the legislature and between the proposed budgets that the governor has brought forward and how the legislature has dealt with them?
Well, I mean, I'd say dysfunctional and really a little sad for all of us, mostly because you want to see your legislators and your governor be successful, because a successful legislature, a successful governor means that our state will be successful. And that relationship is obviously strained, and the governor is having a hard time finding allies in any camp at this point. It doesn't matter what party or where he looks to, doesn't have a lot of allies. So I mean, what do you say about that? That's not a good thing. I'm sorry. What was the question? I'm sorry. I'm just started.
Yeah,
got off on the relationship.
But, yeah, looking
oh,
at.
Okay, go ahead.
Oh, if you.
Well, I was remembering. I mean, this is what should be changed, I guess, about that. And for one thing, whether it's any legislator, including the leadership, including the governor, no one is standing up and saying, "What's the vision?" I mean, everybody's floundering around and talking about the budget, and they're talking about budget numbers, but no one's saying, why are we spending money in the first place? What is the state of Alaska really trying to get accomplished here? I mean, are we just trying to get to a budget number, or do we have a vision of what Alaska could possibly look like at the end of the day, even though we're having to reduce the budget? How the governor went about the permanent fund, changing that. It seems sudden. Now we have vetoes, all these things. That's all problematic. And that leads to the big tangle that we have there. And I think one of the problems is, and I think the big problem is, no one sees clearly where we're going to go. And that's probably part of the concern that I'm seeing as I talk to individuals, is no one has really got a hold of what does a functional Alaska look like after a budget is reduced. We've all talked about the budget reductions, but we're having a very difficult time talking about vision. And I'm not saying that I'm really absolutely certain in my mind what that's going to look like. I know there's pieces of it that we can't let go, but I do think that's where it's going to have to begin. It's going to have to begin by looking at what's our vision and what's our priorities, not this thing of we're going to start fighting over, you know, when you start getting down in the mud, everybody gets covered with it. And, you know, that's where we're at right now.
So we're closing in on time, but I want to jump into our last question, which I think ties in nicely that you've talked about with talking to constituents, What do you think is more important, voting based on your constituents' concerns or your own conscience? For example, if your constituents were to overwhelmingly support an income tax, but you personally oppose one, how would you vote and how would you explain your decision to your constituents?
Well, I mean, to me, conscience is a little bigger than that. It's, you know, I'm not sure an income tax and conscience are not necessarily, I mean, I'm thinking more moral issues when you start talking about your conscience. However, it comes down to communication. I mean, if I have my huge concerns with income tax and I come back to the district and everyone says, you know, I mean, I have large groups and I'm talking to people and everyone says, can't you just see it's obvious we need this income tax? Well, certainly I'm going to listen to that. I mean, there's no question about that. Would that be the first place I'd want to go? No, but I mean, that's not the kind of conscience that I'm not going to stand on that kind of conscience. Like I'm not going to do this. I'm not going to do that. But I do think that, and, you know, and people can obviously, hopefully when they vote you in, they have some kind of sense of what kind of person and where you're going to stand at and have communicated what they want from you. So, I mean, in that case, you know, I would vote with how the constituents wanted to vote, but I would certainly spend the time. I wouldn't just say, oh, okay, well, gee, I think I've talked to two people and they agree with me, so therefore I must be right. I mean, you know, I wouldn't play that kind of game.
Great. Thank you. We're right at the end of time. Again, I'm Kenny Linden with Radio Free Palmer, and we were joined in the studio today with Delaina Johnson, who is running for Alaska House District 11. Thank you so much for being here today.
My pleasure. Thank you.